you had to deal with life. That was the most important thing, to stay alive, to fight the enemy, to stay alive. That was the most important thing, to shoot first before he shot you. Of course, when somebody was wounded, the most important thing was to take care of that individual, try to get them medevaced on a chopper, get them to medical aid as soon as possible. We always had a Navy corpsman with us in the field. And those guys, I can't say enough about Navy corpsmen. I don't think you'll ever hear a former Marine say anything bad about a Navy corpsman. Some of the most courageous individuals I've ever seen in my life. When the Marines were on the deck and the rounds were flying around hot and heavy, the corpsmen were up running around trying to get to the wounded people. We had some of the best corpsmen that I think any Marine unit could have had. We all called them docs. We never called them, well, I won't say we never called them by their names, but all corpsmen were known to us as Doc. And they became everything from psychological counselors to doctors. They were there. They were not considered to be anything other than Marines, even though they were part of the United States Navy. They were trained to work with Marine units. They were trained to work with us, and they were never considered to be anything other than Marines. And those that I knew in Nam were considered to be my equals in every stretch of the imagination. It was a very difficult situation to lose a friend, and those moments that we spent back in the rear area were spent in church services for those we lost. We mourned them in our own way, but again, it was something that was usually turned to revenge upon the North Vietnamese for what they did to our comrades. And we exacted a lot of revenge on the North Vietnamese for losing a lot of our friends. One of our senior NCOs, when I first got to Nam, told us that we had to be the best, because if we weren't the best, we were going to be the deadest. And that was pretty much true. Any mistakes you made, one mistake could cost you your life. One mistake. There was no room for error. You had to be the best at what you did. Not always did mistakes cost you your life. Freaky things happen in war.
Was there ever a point in the war when you felt as though it may be a lost cause, as some of the Americans did back home?
This may sound like a real crazy thing to say, but at the time I was in Nam, that was never discussed by any Marine that I remember talking to, or any of the Marines that I served with in Vietnam. That issue was never brought up. We were too busy trying to stay alive and trying to keep an eye on North Vietnamese activity along the DMZ, along the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and especially in the Ashau Valley. I don't know. It was just never discussed. There were rumors finally in 69 that the 3rd Marine Division was being pulled out. However, the 3rd Marine Division had been there since 1965, so a lot of us felt that it was time for the 3rd Marine Division to be pulled out. We'd been there longer than anybody else as a division. Of course, people were being rotated in and out, but it had been there longer than most units. The Marines were the first major units there, other than Special Forces advisors earlier, before we actually made a commitment to the war. As far as anybody ever coming out and saying the war's a lost cause, we've got no business being here, etc., etc., not one single United States Marine that I ever served with made any such comment, not around me or around anyone else that I know of. Why, I don't know. It may have been different in other units. I can only speak for the unit that I was with, but that simply was not discussed. We were always in the rear area those times that we had off. We had some time to ourselves, but we were in a constant state of training. We always tried to refine our skills. We were always going through physical training and this type of thing. We just didn't sit around all the time. So we always had a program of training going on so that we could become better and better and better and better at what we did. We felt like the less mistakes we made, the less chance we were going to get somebody killed, and the better we could do our job against the North Vietnamese. So the issue of whether or not we should be there and whether or not the war was a lost cause simply never arose. Why, I don't know, but it simply never arose.
Was there ever a time when you thought for sure that you would not make it home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How did you feel?
Well, we had one of those freaky things that I mentioned earlier. We wound up at the wrong place at the wrong time. In one particular instance, we were due to be extracted from an area that we had been in, and the helicopter came in to pick us up, and we got on the chopper. There was a major operation underway, which had there were a lot of casualties, and they had called for the choppers to come in and medevac these people. So we were dropped off at a fire support base called Cunningham in the Ashall Valley. We were supposed to grab another helicopter to get out of Cunningham that night. The chopper never showed up, so we were told there would be a chopper inbound to get us the next morning. And we were shown an area where we could sleep. We were not assigned guard duty because recon people were not assigned guard duty at that LZ. They realized we had just come out of the bush. So, but actually, this fire support base Cunningham was still out in the field. It was just away from the area that we had just come out of. Along about 2 o'clock in the morning, the North Vietnamese decided they wanted to overrun in Cunningham. Military intelligence, which was lousy in Nam anyway, never reported to anybody that there was North Vietnamese activity. This particular fire support base was on top of a mountain. Nobody, I guess, ever thought the North Vietnamese would come up a 45-degree angle to get to the top of that that fire support base to try to overrun it. They had stolen Bangalore torpedoes from, I guess, an army convoy or an engineering group. Bangalore torpedoes are long sections of pipe that lock together, and they are filled with explosives and can be set off to blow bunkers, blow obstacles, blow anything if they're set off right. So they blew the wire, and suddenly in the middle of our area, the Marines covering that particular fire support base, there were only two line companies. Suddenly we had approximately 3,000 screaming North Vietnamese with weapons on full automatic, throwing satchel charges, running, and I don't know, I guess very similar to the last few minutes of the movie Platoon, if anybody's seen that. Very similar to that. That's what it reminded me of. When I saw that movie, I had to kind of walk away from it because it was very similar. The NVA were everywhere. The NVA made one slight miscalculation. This particular fire support base was basically cut out on two levels. You had one level, and then above this other level, you had artillery. The 11th Marines had 15 batteries of 155 howitzers up there. They had been firing artillery support for Marine operations further down in the Ashall Valley. The commanding officer of the artillery battery told everybody, radioed everybody, told us to get in the bottom of a hole and stay there. And they pointed the artillery batteries, all 15 of them, point-blank range at the advancing North Vietnamese and fired flechette rounds, which are artillery rounds full of little darts. And approximately 2,500 North Vietnamese disappeared from the face of the earth in about 2.5 minutes. The rest of them took off and haven't been seen or heard from since, I don't suppose. It was a fairly unnerving situation to suddenly go from what we thought was a helicopter ride the next morning to having 8 recon Marines completely wiped out. Fortunately, nobody in our group, other than a couple of minor wounds, our nerves were pretty rattled, and we were low on ammunition by the time this whole thing calmed itself down. But we damn sure thankful that the 11th Marines were up there with those 15 artillery batteries, or I would not be here talking into this microphone right now.
In the rear area where you had, like, your entertainment and, I guess, your mess hall and that kind of thing, did you have American products like food, beer, those kind of things? What types of products did you have over there?
Well, we were allowed to, we were allowed so much beer per man. We were allowed to buy it, if you will. Usually only two brand names, Falstaff, which was terrible, and Carling Black Label, which was worse. But, yeah, we received these care boxes from USO agencies, if you will, that had cigarettes, pipe tobacco, soap, different things, chocolate you know, things like that. In addition to the regular sea rations, which were terrible anyway, but later on we ran into an army LERP team. One of the few times we ran into one of their reconnaissance teams. They were coming in, we were going out. We ran into these guys by accident. But they had, the Army always had more stuff than we had anyway. The Marine Corps had to make do with whatever they gave us. The Army had the most up-to-date everything. And the Army guys had some, what they called, dehydrated rations, or affectionately known to the Army people as long rats. These were dehydrated meals that could be mixed with hot water, and they tasted like $1 million compared to what we had been eating. They gave us 2 whole duffel bags full of those things. We thought those guys were the greatest things in the world for giving us 2 duffel bags of something we didn't have. And that was one of the few times we did have one situation where we assisted an Army Special Forces camp, Green Berets, if you will, with a little problem they had. They talk about the movies and all this other thing. They couldn't find a rocket emplacement that had them pinned down. They were taking rockets every day, so they asked us to help, and we found it. Doesn't say a heck of a lot for Special Forces, but they did a good job when they were in their right element. But yeah, we had quite a bit of American products that were sent in to us, and we appreciated everything we got. Believe me, when you're in that kind of environment, you appreciate anything you get.
Did you receive care packages from home or anything like that?
Oh yeah, my mom and dad sent a lot of things. My mother told me later that my dad would sit in the kitchen crying and putting things in a box to send to me, such as brownies and all kinds of goodies. Mom would bake cookies, and Dad would tape it up with some of this nylon reinforced tape. Hell, it took me a bayonet to cut the thing open. I was the only one usually that got a box that wasn't crushed or damaged in some way. But those were very special things. Those were the things that kept us going.
Did you share those things?
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
The guys around you?
Yeah, everything was shared. Everything was shared. We were the only family we had. Your real families were back home. Of course, they were thought of. And you know, in those times when you had moments to yourself, they were thought of. And our thoughts always strayed to back home. To me, Oxford, Alabama was a very special place that my mind could go to and be there in those moments when I knew I was relatively safe from harm, because it was very similar to, I don't know, a safe haven, if you will, for my mind to go to and get away from it. But everything was shared. Our family were the guys on the teams, the guys in the battalion, and you know, we shared with everybody. They were the most important people to us at that moment, because they were the ones that were there with us. So everything we had, regardless of what came in the mail, was passed out, shared with everybody. That was just the way it was.
End of side A.